When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This week on Grub Eats World.
If you're going to do an alternative timeline where things didn't work out well, everyone seems pretty okay.
Like, yeah.
If they're like, yeah, we're not friends anymore, but like we seem to be all successful in our individual lives. No, yeah. We don't have friends, but Sean's a successful writer. Angela's a successful writer. Corey and Topanga seem to be fine, even though they're in marriage counseling. Who isn't? Like, it just didn't feel like there was... Like, if you're going to do this, make it extreme. Make it Corey and Topanga are divorced. Make it...
Correct.
Sean is back in the trailer park because nothing worked out for him. Like, really show us, like, things going wrong.
No, here's the thing. That's what's crazy is this entire episode should be how everyone... needs Rachel in their life. In an episode that's supposed to be about Rachel, Rachel doesn't get her due.
When the spawn meets world.
What up, bros?
What up, bros?
And welcome to Bruh Meets World.
When the spawn meets world.
Okay. Your boy meets world fan cast. I'm Siege.
I am Tony Coitus. How are you, sir?
Tony Town Town. I am looking ahead. I'm looking to the future. I am wondering why a CPA is the occupation they chose for Corey, considering that we know nothing about his history with math.
Is that his career? Because they don't say... All right, we'll get to it.
We'll get into it. Anywho, you guys, we're back for another episode. We are back for an iconic episode. And I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. It's going to be fun.
This episode is... You know what? Like, such an iconic episode. I think both of these two-parters are, but this episode specifically, The Plays with Squirrels of It All, is so iconic, so memorable, and I'm so excited to jump in.
Yeah, and then also, we have a special treat for you guys. We interviewed Ryan Schwartz from TV Line this episode. We had a great conversation with him about television, about Boy Meets World, about Girl Meets World. That boy loves a spoiler, but either way, I think we had a really good conversation, Tony.
Absolutely, yeah. He's, you know, it's so fun to talk to a Boy Meets World fan, and I think that you guys are really going to love the enthusiasm that he brings to this conversation.
Absolutely. Also, it's really got me thinking, both this episode and our conversation with Ryan, I am starting to, like, just examine all of these rewatches and, like, the revivals. But you and I should talk about, like, what ones we want to see. Because I do feel like we used to get, like, a very special reunion episode in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think Seinfeld did it for Curb Your Enthusiasm. But I do know, like, the Brady Bunch used to do it.
The Brady Bunch used to do it every, like, 5 years. So you say a reunion series.
I was just saying Friends did it. I do think, like, we need... Now I think the closest we get is, like, entertainment television.
Yeah, that spread, yeah.
Like, they'll do it. I don't know. I kind of want some of those back.
You know what? I think I could use... I think I've had all the nostalgia I want, if I'm being honest. I think that it's great that all of these rewatch podcasts are happening. I'm a fan of a lot of them. But at the same time, it's a lot to keep up with, especially when you're trying to watch new art and new television. It's hard to go backwards and forwards at the same time.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I feel like some of the best television that we're getting right now are, again, they're going back to being unique properties. We're telling new stories again. And I feel like by doing that, we are actually doing ourselves such a good service by allowing these sometimes unknowns to just make really, really good television and movies again. And I feel like we're about to I think everyone's getting tired of nostalgia, so we are entering this era of, hey, let's tell new stories.
Well, I also think it's very similar to how, like, generationally, like, the boomers aren't getting out of the way for Gen X, and Gen X not getting out of the way for millennials. Nostalgia's not getting out of the way to create room for new things sometimes. So, I love nostalgia. Obviously, our whole brand is nostalgia, but there's good and bad. There's good and bad.
Absolutely. All right. Well, if you guys want to share us your thoughts on which revivals you want to see, if you want to share your thoughts on which revivals you already are enjoying, please hit us up at brummeetsworld@gmail.com, or you can tag us at brummeetsworld on all the socials. If you are listening on your phone, follow us. If you are on Instagram, if you're watching on YouTube, subscribe. We really appreciate that. Again, you guys have helped us get so far on YouTube. We really, really appreciate it. As always, if you want, as Tony said before, just hit subscribe and then never look at it again. We enjoy Absolutely. Your feedback on YouTube as well. Anything else, Tony?
No, not really. I think we're ready to jump into this.
Okay, well, let's jump into the episode. Tony, that means you have to give us the tell me about it.
You know what? This is a hard one. I'm just going to simplify it as much as I can. And then we can talk it out. Tell us about it. We've time jumped straight ahead. And no one is friends. Yeah, they're all gone apart. Until place this girl reminds us and brings us back to the heart.
You know what? It was clunky in the delivery, but I could tell it was written smoothly. So I'm really happy for you.
You know what? Billy Joel has limited me in many ways.
Don't blame Billy Joel. You were rapping not too long ago. So don't.
I blame Billy Joel for most bad things in my life. I won't get into it. Not on here. Not publicly.
Okay. All right. So you guys, this is season 7, episode 16, The Piece, a.k.a. 7 the Hard Way.
Why is that the title? Like, I think War for Part 1 and Peace for Part 2 is so good. To add in AKA 7 the Hard Way is so confusing.
Well, 7 the Hard Way was what it was originally called. It's what it's listed as on so many things. I think someone went back and they were like, it makes more sense to just title this The Piece. So there's a little retconning for those of you who don't know. But anyway, let's get into the synopsis. After the prank war got out of hand, the gang comes close to breaking up. Even Mr. Feeney's intervention could not help. We even get a glimpse into the future of how everyone's life turned out if they lost all contact with each other. This episode premiered February 11th, 2000. Again, it was a back-to-back episode with part 1, The War. Let's get into first thoughts. Tony, what were your first thoughts?
My first thoughts on this episode was that it was very much... It felt very much like And Then There Was Sean. The sense that, like, Feeney has them all in the classroom. You guys can't leave. And then we cut to a fantastical
element
that I don't know even matters in the long run. Like, that whole idea of, like...
It was all a dream.
Yeah, like, it feels like they were trying to do a bottle episode that had repercussions that, you know, it just, all of that feels very much like And Then There Was Sean in a lot of ways.
It's funny that you say that. I saw this one and I was really excited to watch this one because I feel like it's iconic in so many ways, similar to And Then There Was Sean. And I wanted to see if it held up because everything I remembered about it, I think kind of like Rugrats All Growed Up, the thing that really imprints in your mind is just being able to see characters you love in the future, you know? So I was like, how much of this is just like nostalgia for what it gave us at the time? And how much of this is a really good episode? And I honestly will say this episode was written better than I thought, but also had a lot of, it was lacking in a lot of ways.
I have not thought about Rugrats All Grown Up in goddamn 20 years, but it's so funny that you bring that up because I think you're 100% right on the money in terms of, like, that's the fun of this, is seeing, like, what could have been. And in a pre-Girl Meets World universe, this is the closest we got to seeing, like, what happened to these characters after the show ended. So I think that's really what makes it memorable.
Also, to your point, in a pre-Girl Meets World universe, Boy Meets World was kind of the first show from our generation that got a revival, that did come back. So this was, for us, unheard of. There was no world in which we thought we would ever see these characters again. Yeah. So to get to see them, I guess at this point in time, 7 years down the road, felt like miraculous.
Like we said, this was the closest that we got. And I think that I'm not really happy with a lot of some of it, but we can talk about it.
Oh, okay. Let's get into the episode then. It's funny you say that because like we open up with like Feeny having everyone in the class and be like, no one leaves this class until you all have made up. And I'm like, why do you care now? Like, you didn't care last week.
He didn't give a shit in the first. He didn't care while it was happening. He just started caring after it had all blown up.
Yeah, but I do like that the episode makes it very clear that we're not talking about just what happened last week. The Jax, the Rachels, and the Angelas of them all are like, these friendships are not what we thought they would be. There's very clearly the lifelong people and the newbies. And it is interesting to see, I will say specifically Corey and Sean, kind of fight back to that idea and argue against it and how weak their argument is. I just thought that was really, really interesting.
I am going to have to strongly disagree that I don't like that this was about more than last week, because what that does is it gives Corey and Sean an out. Corey and Sean crossed a very serious line in the first episode with Rachel. And then much like the Ski Lodge incident, where after all the back and forth, like, well, you kissed the guy at an art gallery, so that's the same as me cheating. It feels like they did the same thing with, like, well, you started it, and then, well, yeah, you glued me to a seat. Like, it's not the same. And so, like, for this episode to treat it like the same, I feel like is giving the boys way too much of a pass.
Well, what's funny is I myself forgot, even though we just covered this episode last week, that the true stepping over of the line was exposing and using Rachel's body. Yes. And this episode never acknowledges that. It's just like, I mean, it does in the recap, but like Rachel's main complaint is you parked in my spot. Like that is what it makes it seem that she's really upset about. Even in the future, she's like, he parked in my spot. And so everyone's like, oh, again, she's held on to this grudge for that. Not the violating of her personal body and showing it to the entire student union. And I feel like they didn't want to remind us of that, because then we would really have to deal with the fact that these boys in a roundabout way kind of like sexually exposed this young girl. But yeah.
Yes, they did. And also Jack played a part in it. And if you remember from the first episode, this whole them versus us was Jack trying to manipulate the situation to leave Rachel on his side after he showed Sean that photo. So like this whole, like, it's the lifelongers versus us. Angela didn't care about that shit. Rachel never said anything about the lifelongers versus us. This is Jack co-opting this whole thing so that he ends up on a good side. And I just think that everyone leaning into that kind of overlooks some of the bigger issues that were presented in ways that I don't know if they get resolved.
Well, here's the thing. I will say, just flat out, they don't get resolved. A lot of the issues and the problems that were brought up don't necessarily get addressed. The superficial ones get addressed. And I will agree with you there. But I also want to point out, you said that Rachel and Angela didn't say anything. No, Rachel and Angela both speak up and say that it is the fact that some of them have been friends their entire lives. I think it was Rachel who was like, these friendships aren't what I thought they were. And then to me, to have Corey honestly 100% just be dismissive of Rachel and just constantly like, why are you making a big deal out of this?
He says, boo hoo, see you next week.
I'm like, what is this? But then also Jack stands up and saying that, hey, this is more than just about last week. And this is about the friendships. The only thing I wanted to call out is your friends are, in fact, telling you that you've hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
Your friends are speaking. One thing that we constantly champion and we're constantly saying is important in any relationship is to speak up and to communicate and to tell people when you're upset, not let it like simmer. And everyone in this episode does kind of voice their concerns and their frustrations. The only thing is Sean and Corey double down that they've done nothing wrong.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. Mmm. What flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
Yeah, and I feel like even the way that Jack was able to co-opt this argument, I think the reason why it works, and like you said, that Angela and Rachel kind of do stand with him, is because they're speaking to larger issues that you and I have spoken of since they started college. This whole thing where, like, Eric says, we've been friends our whole lives, and then Jack's like, no, we haven't. Some of us have been friends, and some of us are, like, we feel like outsiders within this group. And, like, even within this episode, I can't tell you how frustrated I am at Corey, but mostly at Topanga, because multiple times they're like, this isn't about you. This isn't about you. Don't make it about you. And Topanga's like, I just wanted to be a part of Corey and Sean's team. And I'm like, no, you're not listening. Like, this isn't about you guys. And we even said, like, they're constantly centering themselves. They were glad to be rid of you guys after your honeymoon. And you guys, they just had it. And I think that's why this works so well, is because we have seen why all of these characters would be at their wit's end with both, all three of them, honestly.
All three of them. And it's so funny that you say that, because I did love Rachel standing up for herself and being like, I wasn't talking about them, Topanga. And I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about me. A character who none of you seem to care about.
She's
a
like, character... for the first time in our friendship, I was talking about me. And I was just like, oh, girl, you have hurt. You have hurt.
Yeah, understandably so. And it kind of feels upsetting, because the episode doesn't even allow Rachel to get her redemption in the way that it should. Like I said, you and I talked about this last episode. I really do wish that we had done kind of a bridge episode that showed the importance of, like, not a sliding doors, but it's a wonderful life of it all, of what would all of their relationships be without Rachel. And I think this episode tried to address it a little bit. The only thing is, it really doesn't show Rachel. It shows Sean, what Sean's life would be like. It shows Corey and Topanga being married, but also having, like, marital problems. It's like, yeah, but we weren't talking about them.
You know why they can't do the It's a Wonderful Life thing, which I agree would have worked a lot better, to just be like, Rachel, you're a way bigger part of this than you realize? It's because they kind of did that during the very Topanga Christmas, where they show Topanga ending up with Jack and Corey's looking out in the window being like, oh, well, I better get my act together so that this future doesn't happen. Like, it just feels...
So you're saying this show is afraid to repeat a storyline? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Not at all. But yeah, it just feels like that. You're right. Rachel should have been the linchpin, where it's like Corey was dismissing it, everyone was dismissing how important Rachel was, but they should have, like, made sure to show that because of Rachel, all this fell apart. And then they kind of try to retcon that at the end, being like, oh, so you guys just, it ended because of me? And Jack's like, I guess. And it's like, no, that needs to be way more clear. And it needs to be something that's not an assumption. Like, we as the audience should know that based off what was shown to us.
Yeah, not only that, but, like, I would have loved, like, if we would have just taken this season to see what storylines Rachel was really important in. Like, again, if there is no Rachel, where does Angela go? Like, again, Sean and Angela had this huge blow up earlier in the season about how they were not ready to live together.
Yeah.
You know, and even though they were living together with Rachel. So I would have loved to see what it would have been like had Rachel not been there to stop them from moving in together. Maybe they break up earlier because they weren't ready for it, according to this show's logic, not mine. Topanga still end up with Corey if it's not for Rachel being like, hey, we're two girls on the town. By the way, you have a space to, like, be away from your partner.
Sure.
And, you know, like, there are other storylines that we could see. What happens to Jack and Eric's relationship if Rachel never came between them? Are they married? Like, I'm just like, there are different ways we could have explored this. And I feel like it would have been harder for Sean and Corey to be tied in, but it's very clear in the different ways that they brought up where Rachel is relevant, that she is. She does have an impact on some of these characters' lives, and all it took was, like, actually valuing her as a character for people to, like, actually do it. In fact, I'm going to stop right, or I'm going to insert, Sean probably would lose the little relationship he has with Jack if Rachel wasn't there to keep Jack around. Or, again, you and I talked about this, the fact that Jack grieves through his relationship with Rachel, you know?
Sure. And like, how would he have grieved the passing of Chet if Rachel wasn't there?
Correct.
Like something like that could have been great to explore, even for Jack to mention, like, hey, Rachel, you were there for me after my dad died. Like, would have made this episode so much more important and given, you know, her so much more significance. One thing I just want to say is that during this part at the beginning where Rachel is like, you know, Topanga, this isn't about you. Maitland's acting great.
Yes.
Great performance from Maitland. I really felt like she meant what she was saying, and I thought she did a great job. And the other thing I want to mention before we move on from this scene is that, like, Corey and Sean are basically telling the women to calm down the entire time. Like, why are you 100%. Making such a big deal out of this? Don't blow this up. Don't blow this out of proportion. And it's like, no one is listening to anyone. And even Feeny is not really like being like, hey, you're not listening to them. Like, what's the point of having Feeny there if he's not going to mediate in a way that's effective?
Yeah, Feeny just straight up was like, oh yeah, I'm giving up. Like, I don't have any faith that you guys can work this out. And it's like, really, Feeny? Feeny's just, I wonder how much of this is just Feeny just being like, you know what? Like, I don't know how much I care.
Yeah.
I tried.
I want to go home to my wife. I haven't seen her in a season.
Exactly. One thing I do want to talk before we move on is the, is Topanga's frustration. Because even though this is terribly timed for Topanga to be bringing this up, she is kind of picking up the Corey habit of like making everything about her. It is important for that Topanga acknowledges her frustrations with the Corey and Sean dynamic when she says, everyone else is coming apart and they're getting closer. I'm your wife. Like, what's going on here? Why do you not want to get closer to me? And her, you know, being like, look, I even tried to be on their team and I am considered one of the lifers and they still don't even respect me. A, are we saying that we don't respect women?
Yes.
B, it is interesting that she, you know, calls Sean his lover. Take it up with your lover.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this whole idea of Topanga versus Sean. And even though it's played for comedy, it is interesting that we will voice Topanga's really real concerns.
I really had a hard time hearing those concerns, empathizing with those concerns because of the presentation. If this was conversation that was saved for when Corey walks out of the classroom with Topanga and like they're kind of talking and then she kind of says like, no, me and you aren't cool, like I feel like that would have been a little bit more respectful, because like, I mean, even Jack in the classroom points to Angela and he's like, hey, you notice how this was supposed to be about the way we feel and they've made it about them again? Like,
yeah.
It's just, you have to pick your time and place. And I just don't think that was a great time for that grievance to be shared, like when this was about the group as a whole. So that's my whole thing.
But I do think that it speaks to Topanga adopting Corey's bad habits. Oh, you know,
he has rubbed up off on her in the worst ways possible. Like, she needs to spend a little less time with Corey, if we're being honest.
Yeah, no, but that my whole point was, even though I agree that it was terrible timing, it does speak true to who Topanga has become, to where she can't not think about herself. Even when everyone else is. And that's not the Topanga we used to know. The Topanga we used to know would be very emotionally intelligent and think about her friendship with Angela and think about her friendship with Rachel and the fact that these two women have been there for her when Corey wasn't. So yeah.
I also think that like what Topanga is saying but not saying, and I wish that they would have gotten into this more, is that like there should be a friendship that exists between her and Sean.
Yes.
And like the fact is that like Sean, I think, calls her Yoko at one point during this. Like, there is this like versus between them that I understand there's this tension that's existed since the wedding. And I can understand her frustrations there because Corey and Sean were complete pieces of shit at that wedding. But like, there should be something where either Sean or Topanga still wants to save their friendship. And I don't think that ever comes into play.
I agree with you. I didn't think about that, but I think part of this is like she keeps saying to Corey, I'm your wife. But I think part of Topanga is like, yo, I've been here since the beginning as well.
Yeah.
And you still don't give me any respect, Sean. Like, to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
That is upsetting. And you're right. I kind of wish they had explored that a little bit, especially when we jump to the future. Okay.
It's interesting because I just want to say is that, like, once Rachel leaves the room, from that point on, we're in a new timeline.
Yes.
We're in a new multiverse. Even before the time jump, there's this little scene where, like, you know, Corey and Topanga and Sean are talking outside the class. Angela leaves. All that is part of a brand new timeline.
We're entering the multiverse, as we've talked about. And it's so funny that we say that because when it first happened, when you watched the first part of this episode, and Eric's like, she left. Why didn't anyone go after her? I'm like, why didn't you? Like again, everyone's like, why didn't you're still in the classroom? You go after her. So later on when they have him do it, I'm like, okay, yeah, see, this is what I was talking about. But I also feel like it would have been a little bit more impactful if they had done kind of like some kind of special effect or something kind of thing where it's like you are understanding we are like now splitting off in a timeline and this is a what if.
You know, before we go down the timeline, can I just ask, what do you think about this idea of, hey, this group is having an issue. We're going to lock them in the room until they work it out. Do you think that leads to a good resolution, a productive resolution? Do you feel like people sometimes need time to cool off? Like, it felt like if someone were to leave, that means we're never going to be friends again. And I just don't know if I completely agree with that, even though I understand that they were saying, like, you know, these friendships are delicate right now and you need to be careful with them. I don't know if I agree with how it was portrayed.
Well, I think the thesis statement that Feeny says of stupid little fights have a way of escalating. I think that is kind of like the core of what they were trying to get at. And the idea of, I don't know about you, but I do know that there've been plenty of people where it's like, we've had fights, we've had falling outs. And then we all just have kind of like decided that was enough. Like, I don't know why we stopped talking. But we stopped talking, and it was because someone decided they didn't want to maintain that connection.
Can I just say, you know, when Feeny says that thing about how,
stupid little fights have a way of escalating.
Have a way of escalating. There was something about that that reminded me of the Cherry Bomb episode from season one, because if you remember, Sean is in the classroom at night, and then I think it was in the classroom or something, where Feeny has the canvas, and he's like, a small tear can easily like shred this, even if it's really strong, and that's how friendship is. And you know, like, there's times where Feeny has taught this lesson better, I guess, within the course of the show that I didn't feel like he did a great job with here.
You're right. I would have loved to see that Feeny. I would have loved to see that version of Feeny where he, instead of telling them directly, he just kind of shows the snowball effect.
Yeah.
He just kind of illustrates. As a matter of fact, we are always learning a lesson. Why not just have this be a classroom where Feeny is teaching the butterfly effect? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, even this whole, like, and I know we're going to get to it, but the lose one friend, lose all friends, lose yourself could have just been a Feeny lesson. It could have been something that Feeny said, like, without going down the cartoony route, which, you know, obviously brings a lot of laughs. But I guess what I'm saying is that I'm missing that Feeny wisdom. I'm missing that he's teaching us without teaching us, because here he just seems like he's over it in a way where I was like, why is he even here? Like, you could have just had Eric coordinating all of this in the classroom.
You could have.
And him just being like, no one's leaving, or even Feeny leaves and he locks Feeny out or something like that. Like, you could have done it without Feeny, because I don't think he contributed much.
You know, it's funny that you say that. Like, I like the idea of, like, Eric locking Feeny out of his own classroom, you know, like something like that. Because, and the reason why I say this is they clearly bring Feeny in because Feeny is supposed to be the draw that brings them all in for the Feeny's retirement, which is why it's not like a 10-year reunion. It is Feeny's retirement because it allows us to move forward 7 years instead of 10.
Yep.
And I found it really interesting that they use Feeny, because without him, there is no reason for them to come together. However, they don't really show Rachel, they don't give everyone a tie to Feeny to make it worth coming back for. If Feeny had been impactful for Rachel, like we saw last week, Rachel finally go to Feeny and be like, hey, can you help me out like you help everyone else? And Feeny was like, I ain't got time for you.
He's like, nope. So why would she come from Texas to his retirement? Like, that made no sense to me. Like, I actually wish they would have just done the 10-year reunion. That would have made way more sense to me. Feeny could have been like, hey, yeah, it's my last year teaching or something like that. They could have mentioned it, because I really just don't know that all six of these people would have come back for Feeny when only three of them have developed a relationship with him. Even Jack, who spent some time with Feeny in seasons 5 and 6, I just don't feel like he would have gone out of his way, being the Jack that he turns into in this multiverse, that he would have given a shit.
I completely agree with you. Okay, and I do wonder, we'll have to ask one of the writers when we speak to them about this episode, why they did the 7-year jump and not... And why they didn't just like...
They did it to make me feel old, because now I'm watching this in 2006 was our graduating year, and it just made me feel really old.
Exactly. No, I love it. Okay, let's talk about this flash forward. And I want to say, again, we don't even get like a 7-year card or a 6-year card. We just get like, it's 2006 and we're supposed to, you know, it's implied. You can take with that what you will. But I also just found this timeline very interesting, because A, Girl Meets World does exist, so we know who these characters turn into, and they take a lot of what the characters turn into from this episode. But it's weird, because there are also certain things that they have never set up in our own universe.
Yes.
And there are things that they take from this episode that they don't in Girl Meets World, and you're like, why are you picking and choosing? Either give us this timeline and stick with it, or give us a new timeline. But the idea that you pick and choose, it just feels weird. It feels multiversal.
I also feel like if you're gonna do like an alternative timeline where things didn't work out well, everyone seems pretty okay. Like,
yeah.
If they're like, yeah, we're not friends anymore, but like, we seem to be all successful in our individual lives. We don't have friends, but like, you know, Sean's a successful writer, Angela's a successful writer, Corey and Topanga seem to be fine, even though they're in marriage counseling. Who isn't? Like, it just didn't feel like there was, like, if you're gonna do this, make it extreme. Make it Corey and Topanga are divorced. Make it, Sean is back in the trailer park because nothing worked out for him. Like, really show us like things going wrong. And I just don't feel like they pressed that button hard enough.
The only one that they did is with the cartoon Plays with Squirrels. And even that, like, we don't really get logic behind it. Don't get me wrong. I want everyone to understand. This episode is fun. It's great. It's great. And again, the sense of all grown upness and being able to see what these characters who we've come to love can turn into. But also, there doesn't seem to be any real thought into who these characters are. Like, why is Corey a CPA? And I say that because he's constantly, like, it's implied that he is a CPA. He is an accountant. Topanga's a lawyer. And it's like you said before, we don't know Topanga's major. So why is it law all of a sudden? We don't know. Corey has shown no interest in math or numbers or any of these things. So why is he an accountant? Other than they just wanted to make it seem like he was Joe Everyman. But even Corey being Joe Everyman has never shown any interest or affinity to being an accountant. It's a weird choice.
Can I just say, I've seen this episode multiple times. I never thought of Corey as an accountant. I never thought of Topanga as a lawyer, even after watching it. Because what happens is that Angela's like, so you became a successful lawyer, right? And Topanga's like, well, I was looking that way, but I decided to have a baby. So I assumed she was a stay-at-home mom. And I know they talk about her going back to work, but again, they never specifically say she was a lawyer. Even Corey, they never specifically say he's an accountant. They just say, oh, it's busy around tax time, which can be true for like multiple businesses and stuff. So it just feels like even Jack, they're like, you know, I'm a corporate of industry. They're not giving us any specifics. The only one who has specifics is Ryder. Sean, Angela, and Place with Squirrels. They're the only ones we really get to know about what happens to them. Everyone else is kind of implied. It's lazy.
What's also funny about that is I looked and I was just paying close attention to the connections that we get. The idea that Jack and Corey have more time together in this flash forward than Sean and Jack.
Yes.
And I was like, first of all, to see Jack and Corey even have a conversation, I was like, have you guys done this? Has it just been the two of you in ever? Like, yeah. I think this is the most they've ever spoken to each other. It's really weird to me. And it's funny to kind of, like, see them play. I kind of wish that this dynamic was even in real life. I kind of wish that Jack hated Corey. And, like, it showed, and it constantly, you know, like, there's comedy in disdain. And I kind of wish that in our present timeline, Jack just was like, I could do without Corey. Like, you know, the whole... what is it called? Quagmire and Brian and Family Guy. I like that. I want that. I want a Jack that just could care less about Corey.
Sure. It kind of pulls him down a little bit. The tension between Sean and Jack in this like alternative future, I think is so interesting because it seems like no one has talked since that classroom, but these two have more beef than anyone else. They treat it like they were in the Eagles together. Like, they have something happened that happened off screen, that happened past the timeline, that really like made it so that they have animosity. And I'm just be so curious to, again, learn more about that. The one thing I want to point out, so Topanga and Corey are like, you know, we have a baby. Corey's like, yeah, a few months ago we had a baby. But when they see Angela, Corey's like, I'm going to go get some liquor, and then Topanga's like, yeah, give me a large. Now, I don't know much about babies, but I'm pretty certain you shouldn't be drinking large amounts of alcohol or liquor, to be specific, while you're breastfeeding. Again, I'm a man. I'm not trying to mansplain anything to anyone. I'm just saying it seemed a little suspicious to me.
Well, the thing that I will say is we don't really get a history of like how old the kid is now. She said she took some time off to have
No, because Beverly when Glenn. Feeney's like, congratulations on the baby, Sean's like, you had a baby, and Corey says, yeah, a few months ago.
Does he say a few months ago?
Yes, I wrote it down.
Well, the only reason why I'm saying this, even if he says a few months ago, you know how parents are, they speak in their babies in terms of months. A child will be 47 months. So
I was just
saying it doesn't have to be yesterday. That's all I'm pointing out. Okay. And the only reason why I wanted, like, there's a little like future forecasting here, because for those of you who don't know, in Girl Meets World, they end up having a daughter, which they're constantly talking about here.
Yeah.
In this timeline, her name is Beverly Glenn, which I pointed out is a inside joke for the Angelinos, because Beverly Glenn Mall, Topanga Mall, it's an inside
joke.
They're
going to have a son named Sherman Oaks. Like,
exactly. Sherman, here, you joke, Sherman Oaks makes sense for them to do. But anyway, Riley in Girl Meets World was born December 8th, 2001. So in this episode, she would be four or five. So I'm just saying, a young girl, you can still have it.
But that's There's what no I mean. Yet. Like, it's too similar to a timeline that they wanted to happen. Because I have seen very little Girl Meets World. But what I do know is Corey and Topanga have a kid. Their marriage is... things didn't work out for Sean and Angela. So I'm like, so how is this even that different than when they stayed friends?
And I believe Sean, like, we're going to have people telling us whether we're right or wrong, but I believe Sean is like if not a traveling writer, he's a traveling photographer. Very similar to this. And I just found it's funny because for writer to be a writer for Rolling Stone, not saying that it can't be, but it's just like, does he give off Rolling Stone vibes to you?
With the goatee and the leather jacket?
Well, yes, with the goatee and the leather jacket. But like, why? Why did they choose this? And then Angela doesn't even get a publication.
Well, they say that she is, she writes for many magazines. She exactly. is just, she writes for everyone. But yeah, Rolling Stones is interesting. I feel like they were just like, oh, writer likes music. We'll do this for him. But it like, to your point, like when he was interning before he went to college, he was doing it with that photographer. Yeah. So like photography would have made more sense. But again, it either give us something that like has been built into the fabric of the show, or give us something that's so vastly different that we understand that this is a pretend universe. This in-between is so confusing to navigate.
Absolutely. I do want to talk about Jack a little bit. We brought him up earlier, but like you said, him being like a business tycoon, him, we know he comes from money. So him being like a industry, what is it? A power of industry? I don't know what he said. But point being is, I will not lie. a lot of this didn't work for me, but Jack's chemistry with Eric still works, even in the future. When you see him, and he's just like Matthew Lawrence plays it so well, where he's like, ah, oh, don't go back in there, don't go back in there, don't go back. He's like, it's you, it's Eric, I know it is. I can't. And there's like even a moment where he goes, what is this power you have over me? And
Oh, I know
Eric
what the
goes,
power is. Lust.
No, what I said is in that moment, it felt very much, I wish I knew how to quit you. Like it
Yeah.
was just so, it's so entertaining and fun to see like them be just magnetic towards each other, or at least for Jack to be like, no matter how far I get away from Eric specifically, I'm gonna want to just come back in. And it does show that even if we remove the Jarek of it all, there is a kinetic magnetism between these two characters that I really do wish that they just explored and allowed to kind of be in a way that I don't think the 90s was allowing.
I feel torn because I feel like the Jack that we see introduced to Corey is kind of a different Jack than we see like literally 2 minutes later when he's with Eric. And I know this idea is that like Eric kind of brings him back to his truth a little bit, but for him to be like for Corey at the beginning to be like, how's it feel to have all that money? He's like, good. Get away from me. And then to like later on just be like, I'm kind of curious to know what's going on with you. I'm like, there's a disconnect that I'm not buying based off of just the few glimpses we got of him.
But again, that's because we never see Jack interact with Corey. We never see Jack interact with Corey. So I would love if this was like our little hint, and then the rest of the season, we just see that Jack just really doesn't like Corey. And we already know there's good reason to not like Corey in general. So they've created like a world to where Jack was just that one friend where he's like, I'm cool with everyone. I can take or leave Corey. I think that would make sense.
I'm sorry, before we get into the plays with squirrels of it all, can I just mention one thing about Sean real fast?
Go.
When Sean is, talking with Feeny, we find out that Sean has been corresponding with Feeny. He's been writing him letters. And I was like, how interesting that in a world where Sean has lost everyone that's important to him, including the Matthews now, that Feeny has become that person in his life that he's like, I'm going to write to you. You're the longest relationship I've had. And much like when my mom left me and she wrote me letters every day for a year or whatever it was, like, I'm going to continue to write you letters because I need some sense of family. And I just think this idea of Sean seeing Feeny as like this parental figure now that he's lost the Matthews makes so much sense to me. And I think they could have even played with that a little bit more.
You know, I agree with that. Like, I didn't consider it, but you're right. The idea that both Sean and Angela still reach out to Feeny and still send him, and they like it makes sense. It's a little weird for Angela to still be
I was
like
going to
this
say it makes less
person,
sense for Angela with me, but yeah.
but it does make sense that we have been told, and again, we talk about this when we speak to Ryan. We are told a lot and shown very little. But we are told how impactful and how important Feeny is for each one of these characters. So I do like the idea that for two people who don't really have parents, they would try to keep in contact, at least with their parental figure.
Sure. I mean, Angela apparently is very close to her dad, but yeah, that comes and goes. Okay, can we talk about Wilfred L? Can we
Yes.
talk about plays with squirrels?
So there's here's the thing I will say, surprisingly. I watched this episode and I was like, oh, Will actually does a really good job of playing it straight. Like this is a sight gag. Like most
Yes.
of what we know about plays with squirrels, most of like the fun and the humor and the comedy is purely the sight gag and the lines. He doesn't play it big. He does the Feeny call and he does the Feeny call well. Like his just I guarantee you that was his choice to like cough. and like have it be like raspy, but either way, for him to be stoic and still, and again, Jack just very much being like, what is going on with you? And he's like, like, and for him to just like the comedic bit of Mr. Matthews, squirrels,
Squirrels.
Eric plays
Plays
with,
with.
like, again, He does it so well, and I did laugh. I laughed out loud.
I think you're so right that what makes this performance so good is the fact that he is pulling back a little bit. It's like when Whitney doesn't sing the loud notes. It's like when she's singing soft, and it's like, ooh, she's really hitting the sweet spot. Like, yeah. That's what Will's doing here. He's really, like, playing it, like you said, very normal, other than, like, the beard and, like, you know, I married a moose. Like, he says a few things that are a little out there, but most of it is just, like, when he pulls the lollipop from his beard, such a great comedic choice. I don't know if that was him. I don't know if that was the show, but what an amazing choice that was. The other thing I was thinking when I saw Plays with Squirrels, I was like, you know, I bet in 2006, or even like when this episode came out, 99 or whatever, the idea of like someone giving away all their possessions and going off the grid seems like really crazy. But in 2004, I'm like, oh, not so crazy now. It seems like a smart economic choice, to be honest.
Exactly. Like, it's really funny because I do know that Plays with Squirrels comes back in Girl Meets World.
Mm-hmm.
And I have thoughts about that decision. But the thing is, they do kind of treat giving up all your possessions and trying to be one with nature as crazy. Because like, they're like, you do this, you do that, and then you also drink your urine.
And you also marry a moose.
Marry a moose, and you've had no contact with the rest of your family. And all of these things that, like, again, don't really make sense. They're absolutely fun. They are a fun sight gag. I will not take that away from them. But I do kind of wish that either we make this Eric's dream or Corey's dream or some kind of sequence that let us know that this is a dream, so it gives the wackiness some color. Or we give, as you said, we go extreme with everyone. So, like, everyone, like, Corey and Topanga are divorced. Rachel died tragically for some reason. You know, like, give us something, a universe to where it's like, oh, this is, like, not a place we ever want to be in real life.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it really does make fun of Eric's ability to make choices.
And like I said, like, the homesteading is such a trend right now.
Yeah.
Like, growing your own food, living off the grid, you know, living away from the government, giving away worldly possessions. This is such, like, a trend that's happening right now that was kind of hard for me to see it as extreme with my 2024 eyes, as I'm sure I did when I originally watched it.
No, for me, it reminded me of, like, people, how in the early seasons they made fun of yoga.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, boy, that's just the way of living now. Like, yeah. If anything, that's the healthier way of living. Sure. So.
Tofu is great protein.
Absolutely. Okay, Rachel. Why is she from Texas?
Well, it's so interesting because when Rachel comes in, the audience kind of, like, sad moans, like, oh, as if she became, like, I don't know. Like, I was like, oh, she just got her hair curled. Like, there was nothing about Rachel for everyone to be so sad at the sight of her. And I feel like, okay, I feel like they wanted to imply that, like, she became, like, I don't know, a sex worker or something. Like, she became
trashy.
I feel like they were trying to imply that, like, she became something that was, like, oh, how sad. Versus, like, and I'm like, for what? Like, she literally just walked up and said that she, like, is from Texas. She got a divorce. But, like, she didn't, other than that, didn't really say anything to imply that, like, her life was that terrible, other than she was just in a bad relationship. But I don't know. I think that they played up her entrance as something different than it came across as. I don't know.
No, here's the thing. I agree with you in the sense that, like, it is in a way like a sad thing where Rachel is. But, like, let's consider what, like you said, what is sad about her life? She went to Texas. Honestly, condolences. That's I'm sorry for you there. She went to Texas. She hooked up with the ex who, as you said, we haven't heard from since last season.
Yeah.
And she got married, but is no longer married. She's divorced. So to me, they implied that she's a stay-at-home divorcee. And that is sad because as a bombshell of a woman, she's wasted potential. Her wasted potential is in the fact that she married the wrong guy and we don't see any career prospects from her, and not the idea that we don't even learn anything new about her.
Well, she didn't have career prospects before this happened. She was just last episode, like two episodes ago, like guessing what she wanted her career to be during the last weeks of her senior year. Like she, there's nothing that's like, oh, I can't believe she didn't live up to her full potential, because we never got to know what her full potential was.
But I'm saying that the show is saying she didn't live up to her full potential by marrying the wrong dude and being a wife. Like that's her sad story. That's why it's so bad. And that she has a Texas accent, which again, I want to acknowledge, even though I think it's silly, this show has a problem with the South. It has, it says like New England is refined and educated, and Texas means that you're uneducated, and it's a class thing.
It just, it struck me as odd that the audience had that reaction to Rachel before she said a word. Yeah. Before we learned anything, they were like, "Oh,"
well, and I was fair. She was wearing those boots, that skirt. So,
yeah,
I think there's some things where you're like, "I don't know what happened, but girl, you took a wrong turn somewhere."
Also, just elephant in the room. It kind of feels like what happened with Maitland in this and Rachel in this future episode is kind of similar to what's happening with Maitland now, in terms of how the cast is kind of like, yeah, well, like we're kind of doing something separate from her.
Well, no, here's the thing. That's what's crazy, is this entire episode should be and is painted as what happens when you don't have a well-connected friend group where everyone feels valued.
Yeah.
That's the argument. And it should, therefore, show how everyone needs Rachel in their life. Like Corey, the biggest person who is like, who cares? He should have, there should be some repercussion for Rachel not being there. And the only thing that they do to address that is for Rachel to be like, oh, you guys haven't spoken since that fight about me? Huh. I guess it can be implied that my friendship kept you all together. And it's like, but we don't say that. Instead, we spend most of the time learning that Angela and Sean never got their act together. Learning that Topanga kind of resents Corey. Learning that Jack and Eric have this magnetism where they can't help but be in touch with each other. But as far as Rachel's connection with everyone else, they don't show it. And it kind of like, it should be, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, or what it should have been done, and we wouldn't have had time to do this, but like if they would have done it in different ways, the How I Met Your Mother last season, where everyone meets the mother on their own terms. In that way, when Ted meets the mother, it's like, oh, she fit in perfectly with everyone else. Like, I want something along those lines where it's like everyone connects with Rachel privately, one-on-one. We all learn little bits and pieces of information about each character by their interaction with Rachel. And it turns out Rachel is the glue that brings them back together. But you're right. This episode is supposed to be about Maitland. It dismisses Maitland's character. And then in the years since, they don't really bring Maitland in at any point. And it just kind of feels that way. In an episode that's supposed to be about Rachel, Rachel doesn't get her due. All I'm saying.
Yeah, and I just like, it feels like if anything, every other character should have ended up a little bit more like Plays with Squirrels, and Rachel maybe was the one that was like, oh, I ended up successful, and everyone's like, wow, maybe we missed out on something by being friends with her. Like, that even would have been better.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if they would have, again, if we're going to go crazy with it, why not make Rachel the president of the United States? You know, like, why not make Rachel one of, like, it turns out Rachel is the one who called them all together because she's now the dean of the school.
Sure.
Or whatever. You're right. Like, let's make
Rachel. Well, I got one.
Go.
Feeny is sick. And Rachel, like, Feeny later comes out saying, actually, you know, Rachel's been taking care of me. She stayed back, or she helps me somehow. She brings me groceries. Like, she's there even though all of you guys have moved away. Something like that to be like, wow, Rachel's a real one. Like, you could have just done something more other than to say, like, oh, she got divorced. And now she just kind of, like, Miranda. Like, what does she do now? Like, we don't know. It's not enough.
It's funny because I didn't think about it, but like they say, and they don't show, but they say that, oh, Rachel, her absence means that this friendship wasn't good together. But the only person whose life is worse off is Rachel. Like, yeah. Everyone else doesn't have the connections that they may want, but they are achieving their dreams.
And to your point, the fact that the resolution to this whole thing is like, no, let's stay friends. And then in Girl Meets World, she never comes back. It's like, Rachel wasn't supposed to be a part of this in any timeline, in any multiverse. She was never supposed to be there.
Well, because, all right, when we snap back, you know, lose one friend, lose them all, lose yourself. Great lesson. I love it.
Me manifesto.
Yeah. Will does a great job. He does a great job. I want, for anyone who's like yelling at their foes right now, I do love Will's performance. I just, speaking with the story, I think we could have done better.
Well, I will say, the idea of having 3,000 blank pages, one that has writing on it and him saying nothing else seemed important, feels very like, oh, like I'm getting, like, again, Will's able to bring the comedy and the heart, where I don't think any other character is really giving me the heart I need, that Michael Jacobs moment to like, correct, seal the episode for me.
Absolutely. Also having like a photo of the moose.
It's like, I married a moose. We don't need counseling.
Such a dig, right?
Also, has Eric and Corey, they haven't talked in 7 years.
Like, this entire scene. Like,
yeah, like they're your family. Like, why did Eric disappear from his brother's life? Like, there's so many questions.
Absolutely. Okay. Anyway,
we step back.
Get back to the time. They come up, and you know, Rachel has left. Eric goes to get her, which I was like, yes, this is what you needed to do. And he like pins her down to the ground a little. I'm going to allow it, because it is not played sexually at all. It is, sure, honestly there for him to just be like, you're going to stay here. We're going to fix this. We're going to work it out. And then
a callback to, no, Sean, this is a hug. Like, it felt, exactly, like one of those moments. Yeah,
absolutely. But the thing is, Angela stands up. She's like, Rachel, you're my roommate. And it's like, first of all, yeah, why didn't you say that earlier? Like, yeah, when they were saying who is everyone. Like, why didn't you say that? Jack's like, hey, even though we're not dating anymore, doesn't mean I want to be your friend. Again, why didn't you say that earlier? Like, I get that it gives you this moment to say this, but why aren't we allowing the episode to say this throughout? Like, again, it just feels very last minute when you guys had the opportunity, when Rachel literally said, and what am I?
And what am I? Oh, heartbreaking. And so, like, yeah, Angela reassures Rachel, hey, I care about you. Jack, hey, even though we broke up, I still care about you. Topanga, well, I guess I'm not a part of Corey and Sean's little club, so is there room for me down there? It's like, Topanga, why aren't you also reassuring Rachel in this moment? Like, that's the thing everyone else is doing, and you are just on your own thing.
Well, at least even even Topanga and Sean kind of make up with each other. Corey does nothing.
Corey does nothing. Corey, he's like, is there room for me? Nothing. I'm not going to take accountability. I'm not going to apologize. Sean, neither Corey or Sean apologize to Rachel.
No, neither of them do.
And, like, again, the simplest shit.
Yeah. I thought this episode, we'll get into grades and everything else. I thought this episode was fun. I thought it was a good, like, experiment. We love alternate universe episodes. I don't like flashback episodes. We know that. But, like, alternate universe episodes are usually really fun, especially when we do the all grown upness of it all. But there was a lack of accountability from Corey. And I was like, did they feel that Corey had nothing to apologize for? Or did they feel like it's not true to Corey's character to actually pretend he likes Rachel?
It just felt like there was no evolution for Corey at all. Even Sean, like, I don't know what that future dream sequence was. I don't know how that impacts Sean and Angela's relationship. Like, there's so many, like, unanswered questions where I'm like, I don't know how this fixes anything.
Yeah. Bruh moment. Do you have a bruh moment this episode?
Yeah, my bruh moment of the episode was Topanga drinking while she's clearly nursing still.
Again, I don't know that she's nursing, but I'll give you that. Honestly, I want to say, as much as there is to usually say, I didn't really have a rub moment this episode. I didn't think we did anything egregious.
Okay. All right.
If I had to have one, it would be the idea of like Rachel not being a success merely because she got divorced. It feels very old school.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I feel like this is one of the very few episodes where I'm like, I don't think you did anything overly bad.
Right. Oh, yeah. Don't pick up the scab.
Exactly. It's weird that they chose 2006 because 2006 is the last year that we don't have smartphones.
So it's smart.
The last year that we don't have Facebook, but like, there's no way that they would have known that.
No, they did know. It's
weird.
They did know.
They did know. I thought that was very interesting and weird. The idea that this only makes sense because there is no Facebook where you can look up everyone to the mass population. So,
I just want to say to that point, just because I had mentioned that 2006 we graduated high school, like we went through our entire schooling without smartphones, and like I think that's the millennial like nostalgia that we look back on is just like, wow, we really had a childhood for real in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Okay. And then what is the Finney lesson? What do you think the lesson of this episode is?
Clearly, the lesson is the lose one friend, lose all friends, lose yourself. But I just, again, I don't know that these characters lost themselves by losing Rachel. I don't think Sean lost himself. I don't think Angela lost herself. I don't think Topanga lost herself. I think Jack became who Jack was meant to become. Like, I just don't think we saw that. So I think the big thing is like, it's similar to last week where it was like, listen to your friends when they have grievances. Like, we talked about that season. I think it was the Cherry Bomb episode where Feeny does the ripping of the canvas, and he's like, this is relationship could be strong, but as soon as there's a tear, it can rip. I think that's actually more of the lesson. I just don't think that was articulated in this episode.
I can't remember the exact quote, but something that I got out from this episode that I really do, I felt was the lesson is if you don't put in the work now, you may not get a chance tomorrow. Idea of, it seems small now, it seems like not a big deal, but if you aren't willing to work on your relationships today, there may not be a relationship to save tomorrow.
You never know when the last time's the last time.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a really good point. What grade are you giving this?
You know what? Even with all my complaints, it was a fun episode. I thought it moved along nice. I'm going to give this episode a B+.
B+. Yeah. Love it.
I'm so sorry. Just to explain that a little bit, I think that in the season where we've had duds, I still feel like this is a highlight of the season for me. Regardless.
I completely agree. Especially when you look at some of the episodes that you remember and that like stand out in your mind and you revisit them and you're like, oh, this was lacking.
Mm-hmm.
I think this episode actually, it holds up. Again, there are a lot of things, a lot of complaints that we had, which I feel were understandable, but it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
If anything, to me, it was missing elements, but it wasn't a bad episode.
So what's your grade?
My grade is going to be a B.
B? All right. B episode.
Solid B episode. But really, I'm not going to say it's one of my favorites of the season, but I feel like it's a good episode and it's a good representation of the season.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, so before we move on to our homework, we are going to have our conversation with Ryan Schwartz from TV Line. Let's head over to that. You guys, this week we have the senior editor at TV Line, where he covers many TV shows and comedies, including Only Murders in the Building, Ted Lasso, Big Bang Theory, Young Sheldon, and of course, Boy and Girl Meets World. He wrote the article, Boy Meets World Turns 30, an ode to the perfectly imperfect continuality of Burst TGIF sitcom. Please welcome to the show, Ryan Schwartz.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
That is like, such a perfect title for a Boy Meets World article, by the way.
You guys, we stressed for so many hours, like going back and forth on that headline. It took forever to crack, and I'm so happy with it now.
Perfection.
It was perfect. When I read perfectly imperfect continuality of verse, I was like, yep, nope, that pretty much sums it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about TV Line first and foremost, and then tell us about your history with Boy / Girl Meets World.
Sure. So TV Line is a very sort of consumer friendly site. We, you know, I think a lot of sites have sort of leaned away from covering broadcast television, but when you look at ratings, I mean, broadcast is still huge. So, you know, you mentioned in the intro, I cover things like Big Bang and Young Sheldon, and those shows do huge, you know? And so I started at TV Line, almost 10 years ago. I was an intern, still in college. And I started when I think Girl Meets World was entering its second season. And so sort of one of my first in-person interviews was with Ben and Rowan years ago. And so it was a lot of fun sort of being sort of inside a bit when that was happening. Cause I mean, Boy Meets World was one of my first TV obsessions. My sister always likes to joke that the first book I ever read was a TV guide. and I would just sit there and like memorize when reruns of Full House were airing, when reruns of Boy Meets World were airing. And, it wasn't really until I got into college that it became clear that you can make a career out of writing about TV, not just being involved in production or being on screen. And so I got my journalism degree from Hunter here in New York. And I was heading into my last semester of senior year and reached out to one of the bosses here and said, I'd love to intern for you guys. And here we are 9.5 years later.
Wow. Man, I wish I had that kind of chutzpah. Like, honestly, I didn't even think you were like, and I learned 10 years ago that you could just have a job covering it. And it's like, it took us 10 years ago to even consider it.
Right. You said that you got to interview Ben Savage. We've also gotten to meet Ben Savage. Mm-hmm. As a Big Boy Meets World fan, what was that experience like for you? Were you nervous? Did you like feel any nostalgia just talking to him? What was that experience like?
Oh man. I mean, you guys, just to like put it into perspective, I think that was the first in-person interview that I sort of ever had.
Wow.
A lot of this job, and now especially like post-COVID, is virtual Zooms and things of that nature. Seeing him in person, I do remember the first thing I thought was, he's a lot shorter than I thought he would be. which is the case when you speak to most people who you grew up watching on TV and you just expect to be like this towering persona. I thought he was a really sweet guy. Came off exactly as you'd hope. And Rowan, I don't even know how old she would have been kind of going into that second season, but she was very sweet, very timid. And, you know, Ben definitely was sort of playing father figure and sort of leading her through a what I'm sure was a busy press day.
Sure.
That was a lot of fun.
It's so funny that you mentioned Rowan, because I was like, she got to make a little guest appearance in this episode that we're about to cover.
Oh, today. Yeah. And you guys, I was just watching the flashback before we got on, and it jumped out at me. Like, I totally forgot that they gave her a different name in the flash forward, Little Beverly Glenn. And
yes,
I'm so relieved that they changed that. Like, it's fine. It's not a terrible name, but like, I just can't imagine a hit Disney Channel sitcom with a protagonist named Beverly Glenn.
Well, do you know the joke of Beverly Glenn?
Oh, I don't.
Tony, do you know the joke of Beverly Glenn?
It's a neighborhood here.
It's a neighborhood, just like Topanga is. Mm. It's a neighborhood in California. So like the whole point of naming her Beverly Glenn was to allude to Topanga. Yeah. And you're right. They absolutely needed to change it. I'm glad that they did. That was a little inside jokes for the Californians.
Nice.
Brian, why do you think Boy Meets World has stood the test of time compared to maybe other TGIF shows or even other shows from the 90s that maybe had more notoriety or more press at the time, but have not had the lasting, you know, fan appeal that Boy Meets World has had?
I think the fact that it aged with its audience helped a lot. You know, you guys have spoken about this. They've spoken about it on Pod Meets World. They never spoke down to their audience. You know, they didn't speak down to the kids who were watching. They certainly never made the adults look stupid. And I think that it also wasn't a show that was too pop culture heavy. Like, it definitely feels of the time, but you know, you watch something like Full House and they're referencing things like Tiffany, and Boy Meets World doesn't do that. You know, even watching, you know, these episodes before our interview today, it's just, they hold up so well There's definitely some problem areas, which I'm sure you guys have probably discussed, but I just think even at its most cartoonish, these people felt real, and you could either see yourself in these characters, or if you were younger than them watching it, like I was, you sort of, these were some people, for better or worse, that you sort of look up to or aspire to.
It's so funny that you say that. I was going to ask, you are a huge fan of Boy Meets World and Girl Meets World. Tony and I often talk about how this show like made an impression on us as younger kids.
Yeah.
And you said that you used to watch this when you were younger. Were there any lessons that you think you like learned or that you took from the show that you look back and you're like, honestly, maybe that wasn't the greatest thing for me to take away from?
I mean, I would say one positive is it sort of taught me that teachers should sort of be revered, and these are people to look up to. And, you know, I think a part of me always sort of sought that kind of relationship with, at least in grade school, sort of with teachers. And I remember going from third to fourth grade, and I had the same teacher both of those years. I'm like, oh, it's happening. It's happening. This is going to be the teacher that follows me until I marry my high school sweetheart in college. I think looking at it now, it created probably some unrealistic expectations. I mean, not just for myself, but I think for most people, about sort of relationships and sort of how everyone needs to be Cory and Topanga, and like, this is the couple to revere. And, you know, as you guys have spoken about, as they've spoken about in Pod Meets World, like the expectations that Cory and Topanga set, when a lot of what we know about their history was told to us and not shown, it's just not realistic. And that's not something that you realize watching it growing up. And watching it later, I feel like you could sort of understand that this was not actually realistic, but still sort of admire what they were trying to do with the story. When I was watching these episodes, you know, something you guys have spoken about a lot of in season 7 is that this is not a great season in terms of likability for Cory. I mean, he is just a monster, like, throughout a lot of this. And I was thinking about that coming into this two-parter, how I was worried that that was sort of going to like change my perspective on the episode. But as it turned out, for me at least, the episodes were a little too cartoonish for me to really dislike him in these instances. The antics were so big and so heightened. And Feeny, in a way, in this episode, especially in that first scene in the student hall, where he's just amused by all of this, he almost feels like a stand-in for the audience. Like, it doesn't feel rooted in reality at all, and it sort of feels like it's winking at the audience, let's just have fun with this. And at the same time, you know, we're talking about sort of the friendships to admire. This episode really drives home the point, and I don't know if it was their intention, but of the fact that, like, Rachel really doesn't have a part in this group, a natural part in this group. And I was thinking back to sort of, you know, the episode at the end of season 6 where they have that dinner where everything sort of blows up, even when she's a bridesmaid of Topanga's, like, these are instances where it felt like Corey's clique and Eric's clique, like, they're all in the same place because TV dictates that they have to be, but they really didn't do a good job of establishing this as one friend group. It sort of felt like, oh, Friends is the biggest thing on TV. All of these people need to be friends. And this episode, whether they intended to or not, really drives home that they didn't do a great job sort of establishing Rachel's part in this group. I mean, even in the flash forward, like, what is her sort of future look like? It's going back to the boyfriend who we only heard about in her first episode and never actually met. And, but yeah, I mean, so much of this episode still holds up. I mean, like, Eric coming in as plays with squirrels, like, that's still funny. Like, no matter how many times I watch that, Will is so good.
Amazing.
That all of the faults of this episode, of this two-parter, unlike some other episodes, kind of forgiven. It's just fun.
I love how forgiving you are. Like, and I think a lot of, like, in order to be a Boy Meets World fan, you have to be forgiving of, like, everything.
Because, oh, yeah.
Like, it's of a different time. It's of a different, like, thing than we do with streaming nowadays. But mm-hmm. I will say, watching this, I had similar thoughts to you, where I was like, if anything, especially part 2, shows you that Rachel is just kind of like thrown in, and they didn't make any effort to like build her character out. And so to know that in Girl Meets World, she never comes back, I was like, I really do wish that, like, if you guys are saying these people were friends, almost everything they predict with the other characters kind of fits and they don't venture too
far.
But they don't even like try to mention Rachel a little bit. And I wish they had.
No, I mean, the one shout out to her in that episode where Jack comes back, where Eric does his classic, Rachel.
Yeah.
Like, that sort of drives home the fact that, like, she spent one season sort of the object of their affection. In the next season, she was just kind of coasting around and they sort of plugged her in where they needed her, but they really didn't give her a storyline.
To be honest, the way they treat Rachel in this episode is reflective to how they've treated this character since she's been introduced.
Oh, yeah.
It is so, like, it, you know, all of the criticisms that Siege and I have had since they've started college seem to be acknowledged by the characters in the show.
Right.
Without really giving a resolution. Even at the end, when they're all dogpiling on top of each other, hugging, Corey comes over is like, any room for me? Not that I'm going to apologize to anyone.
Nothing.
Take accountability for anything. I'm just like, you guys still like me enough to keep me around? It's so frustrating that there's never just like a resolution for her character, or really for a lot of the characters. But her specifically, I just feel like they didn't know what to do with her and they never figured it out.
They never figured it out. And it was almost sad watching Sean and Jack in that flash forward.
Ooh.
And how they sort of never really became close in this version of events. And then you go to Girl Meets World and they didn't even bother giving them a scene together. Like, even Sean and Turner had like that ham-fisted scene at the end where like it's like, come on, turn on the audience sign for applause and let's give them one big hug. Like, at least they got that. Like, the fact that there was no connection with them in Girl Meets World, it just makes this moment in this episode all the more sad.
Well, Ryan, now you're spoiling things for me because I have not seen Girl Meets World. It's true. I've seen one episode. I saw the pilot and I was like, this ain't my show. And I just abandoned it.
It's so funny that Tony says that, because I was going to say for you, Ryan, as a huge Boy Meets World fan, you said that you were one of the first to cover Girl Meets World. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, did Girl Meets World live up to your expectations? How do you feel like the future that Girl Meets World paints compares to like even the future of this episode?
You know, I'm so conflicted with that show because I felt like there were moments where you could see the writers pushing to sort of go beyond the boundaries of what Disney Channel would allow. I feel like there's a stretch early in season two, which I think it's somewhere in season two where the whole show just falls apart, honestly. Like, they just stop trying to make it anything but a Disney Channel sitcom at a certain point then. But there is a stretch at the beginning where so many people are coming back and we're revisiting old sets where it felt like they're trying. They're really trying here, and it gave me hope. And I think the thing that sort of killed it for me was when they brought Eric back, and suddenly Plays with Squirrels is sort of a reality. And it's not because it makes any sense to the plot. It's because a Disney Channel audience will see this man in this outlandish costume and just think it's funny. And it breaks my heart a little bit that they, you know, I think Ryder has said this before in interviews that sort of predate the pod, where he talks about how if Girl Meets World had come around like in a post Fuller House world, they might have been able to do things a little differently. Maybe it would have gone somewhere else. Maybe it would have gone to Netflix. You know, not that Fuller House is like a pristine example of how to do a revival, but I feel like that show at times had a better handle on how to sort of placate the legacy cast and sort of make a show for two different generations than Girl Meets World did. And it's just a shame that, you know, I don't think it's hurt Boy Meets World's legacy. I think that a lot of people have sort of forgotten about Girl Meets World, or it sort of feels like a pipe dream. It just doesn't feel like it actually existed for a lot of people. But I would be very curious to hear what you think of it if you were to watch it through for the first time. Like, have you guys spoken about potentially, I mean, you're not going to go through every episode, but have you spoken about maybe doing an episode where you sort of binge some select episodes and sort of give your take on it?
I think it's so funny. We have been asked this question many a times. I feel like Girl Meets World is unavoidable. Like, very much like at some point in time, Pod Meets World will have to address certain elephants in the room, i.e. Rachel. At certain point in time, we will have to address Girl Meets World. How that comes about, we're still deciding. But trust for everyone who's listening, we understand how big Girl Meets World is. And it I mean, more than anything, it gives us stars like Sabrina Carpenter. So I feel like...
Right. Like, who, even at the time, felt like something big was coming for her.
Yep.
Like, you watch that show, and even if it, in its, like, lowest moments, like, she was, like, the shining star among this younger cast, and it was very obvious. I mean, they clearly, like, realized it, because she sort of became the breakout star even during its run. They focused so much more on her relationship with Sean than Riley's relationship with Corey. I mean, that was supposed to be the show, right? I mean, the pilot of that show is sort of Riley rebelling in Corey's sixth grade class. And by the end of season one, it's about Riley having this sort of makeshift father in Sean. And it sort of goes from there.
Okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to, watch this. And, you know, I will say about like a Girl Meets World rewatch, it would be fun to have the tables turned, because when we've done our Boy Meets World rewatch, I know every episode by heart, and C just watching it for the first time. So the fact that he has seen Girl Meets World and I would be watching it for the first time would be fun.
I love that you said that. Really quickly, you were talking to the producers of the Conners and stuff like that. I was thinking you work in kind of traditional media criticism, like you work as a writer, you work like, you know, doing the old-fashioned way. What do you think about like this new wave of like rewatch podcasters and all of like the YouTubers? Like, how does that affect your job, and like, what do you think about it, how it compares?
I mean, I think that we've sort of maybe hit an oversaturation with rewatch podcasts. You know, I'm not going to call out any specific ones, but it, you know, there are certain shows, and I think the same is true of revivals, which is that shows that have sort of stuck around and had a lengthy run in syndication, there's a reason to maybe bring those back business-wise, right? Like, there's an audience there. We know it's still there, right? But there are some other shows that have started doing rewatch podcasts in the last couple of years, and I don't know that the audience is there for it, you know? And asking people to commit to a rewatch podcast of a show where, you know, in the 90s, if there's few shows that are doing rewatch podcasts that did under 100, 150 episodes, you're asking a lot of people. And I think that it's made everyone on the consumer side a bit more selective about what they're watching, what they're listening to. I mean, heck, I was listening to every episode of Pod Meets World at the beginning, but it just timing didn't allow me to keep listening to every episode. So, you know, I always listen to the season recaps that you guys do with them. If there's like a favorite episode from the run, I'll listen into that. I mean, this past week I downloaded the Long Walk to Pittsburgh podcast episode they did, and I was listening to that. But it doesn't so much affect sort of what I do. I mean, if anything, sometimes these rewatch podcasts can be sort of a goldmine, because they're revealing so much that we didn't know, whether it be behind the scenes stories or you know, I remember early on in Pod Meets World when Will was talking about the fact that they pitched him on a spinoff where Eric moves to Los Angeles. And he told us like the whole cold open for what that pilot would have been. And no one's ever told that story before. So there are pros to these rewatch podcasts, and there's some cons in the sense that like there's too many, and we need to sort of have a collective meeting where we decide you're allowed to have a podcast, you are not allowed to have a podcast.
You don't want to watch the Drew Carey Show rewatch pod?
If your show is not successful enough to come back, in all likelihood, there's probably not a huge audience there for your rewatch podcast.
If your show isn't available for streaming, don't do a rewatch podcast.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Like this Boy Meets World sort of renaissance the past decade or so, it would never have happened if the show wasn't accessible. It just wouldn't have happened. Yep. I remember there were a few years where it wasn't in syndication at all. Like it had run on ABC Family, then it got dropped for a little bit, and then it came back on, and I think MTV2 had picked it up or something. But there were those few years where it was sort of like, I guess that's sort of it. It sort of died out a bit. And then I think around the time they announced Girl Meets World was in development, it came back into syndication, and suddenly it had like the second life.
Yeah, I mean, Disney definitely helped the show find a new audience, because they would also do they would re-air a lot of the original show as well.
They did. Mm-hmm. It's funny watching this two-parter. There's the scene where Angela grabs the water bottle and she sort of rubs it along Sean's shirt and then tosses it in his pants. And I distinctly remember that when this show would syndicate on Disney Channel, they did not show that moment. Ooh. And I did not see it until ABC Family aired. And I was like, oh, I've never seen this before.
Too saucy for television.
too saucy for that Disney Channel audience at 2 a.m. when it would air.
Brian, what do you think is the legacy of this two-parter? Why do you think this two-parter stands out in people's minds?
I mean, it's funny. When you guys reached out to me about talking for this one, the first thing I thought about was that, you know, we sort of connected after I did that sort of tribute to Boy Meets World's 30th. And in that video where I break it all down, I'm wearing a Plays with Squirrel shirt. And it's so funny how this one little moment, this seemingly meaningless moment, it's just a sight gag. That's what it is. And yet it's one of those moments, and Boy Meets World has so many of these that have just sort of stood the test of time. And you don't have to be a certain age to find them funny. I mean, for years, my sister and I would quote the season 4 opener with the Amish man and with the horse and buggy going, "That farmhouse there." And, you know, it's just little moments like that where I wouldn't say the humor was sophisticated, but it wasn't dumbed down. There was almost a brilliance to how dumb it was. Sure. And I think that those moments have stood the test of time and have allowed for the show to have this extended life, to have this legacy, because it's not a show we're going back and rewatching and going, man, did I waste time watching this? Like, there are a lot of problems, but it's of the time, and we're able to watch this and still enjoy it as adults. And you can't say that for every TGIF sitcom. You just can't.
Exactly. No, I think that's perfectly said. One of the things that we keep watching is, I said myself, I was warned about season 7, and everyone was like, season 7 is like a really drop off. And I will not say that it reaches the highs of like season 4 or 5. No. But I'm like, there are still some good stuff in here. Like, there have been like one or two episodes where I'm like, throw it out, don't need it. But as I've learned more about television making, I'm like, oh, but that's also where new writers are like getting their teeth. And if that means I can give someone a chance to kind of explore this world a little bit, and they end up going on to make great television, well, then let them have the dumb episode. So yeah.
Also, and, just, you know, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, episodes like this clearly make such an impression that, like, I remember as a kid thinking, like, the later seasons, they're my favorite, right? Like, I remember as a kid, like, I'd go back and just rewatch season 7 constantly. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was that it looked newer. I mean, as a kid, it's all about things looking sort of newer and brighter and shinier. But episodes like this, there's the one coming up that I know you guys haven't spoken about yet, but the brotherly shove episode that speaks to Corey and Eric's relationship in a way that later seasons really don't. I think it's just, there are such standout moments in an otherwise sort of lackluster season, but those standout moments really hit. And so you sort of can forgive some of the faults of this final season.
Well, I think part of that is, you know, I don't want to give all the credit to Will Friedle, but I think all of the actors in general feel so comfortable in these roles. They know these roles so well, and they're given the freedom that maybe they didn't have at the top half of the series. You know, it feels like they were like, all right, we got moved to a later time slot. We're in season 6 or 7. We'll just do something funny. And like a lot of brilliance has come from that.
Yeah. I mean, Ben's performance too. I mean, there is definitely a shift. I think it probably happened somewhere in season 5, probably past all the Topanga, Lauren stuff, where Ben is just allowed to just be like an 80-something-year-old Jewish man. And it honestly, it brings out the funniest side of Ben, bringing that and instilling Corey with his sense of humor. So it sort of makes up for sometimes the fact that the writers sort of failed him in terms of the fact that he's not really a nice guy by the end. This is, you know, you care so much about Corey in those first couple of seasons, and this does not feel like the same character. The saving grace is Ben's performance, I think.
Absolutely.
Completely agree. Ryan, we have to wrap this episode up, but we really appreciate you joining us this week because your energy and your enthusiasm for the show just shines through. And it's so fun to have people on who like feel as strongly about this show as we do.
Well, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. And if you wind up doing Girl Meets World, I am requesting right now, I need to come back.
Absolutely.
Oh, done.
Absolutely. Awesome, you guys.
All right. In whatever way that happens, we will definitely be giving you a call.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. And when we're back, we will do our homework. Okay. I enjoyed that conversation with Ryan so much.
So much fun to have him on. Again, I love having people on here who are fans who can really nerd out. And, you know, his unique perspective of having started with an interview with Ben Savage as his first in-person interview feels like this is the exact podcast he was meant to be on.
Absolutely. It was so much fun to reach out with him. It was so much fun to chat with him. I look forward to doing it again. I do think he's someone who like we should definitely have back on, especially if we venture over to any of the Girl Meets World territory, because he seems to know his Girl Meets World stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, homework. What homework do you have for this week?
You know, I'm going to change things up a little bit. I'm going to do some music. I found a band called Dury. I think I'm saying that right. D-U-R-R-Y. They have an album called Suburban Legend that I've been listening to nonstop. And what I love about this album is basically this band formed when a man and his wife moved back into their parents' basement during COVID, and they linked up with one of her friends, and they just started writing music about like how much it sucks to be a millennial, like how capitalism has kind of beaten them down, and how like life hasn't turned out the way it was. And like what they're speaking to in their music feels very much like the music of the 1960s, or like a Bruce Springsteen, where you're like, wow, like you're speaking on something that's affecting our generation politically in a way that I'm not hearing in a lot of pop songs on the radio. And you're doing it in ways that are really, really catchy. I mean, they're doing like kind of like pop punk rock. I don't know. It's not really punk, but it just feels like something that feels nostalgic, but also feels current. And again, what they're speaking to, like they have some songs like Who's Laughing Now, where it's like, my mama told me that I should never get a tattoo because I won't get a job, or I should go to college because I want a good life. And like, guess what, mom, who's laughing now? Like the joke's on me, apparently, like for doing everything I was supposed to do and it didn't work out. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, this is really touching me in ways that like, I feel like music is supposed to touch people. So my Suburban Legend by Jury. You can find it on Spotify. It's a great album.
I love it. I love, like you said, every rock is coming back. And I honestly feel like everyone's just preparing for Beyonce's third act. Like,
I'm still on the second act.
No, absolutely. And I was having this conversation with someone the other day where there is something about being a millennial that we just don't believe in rules anymore, because it's like, no, I did that. I did what I was told, and that ain't working out for anybody. So
none of this is working out.
Okay. You know what does work out? My homework. If you haven't seen it, I have to tell you guys. At this point in time, it's been out for a while, but Challengers.
Zendaya. You've told me this. Yes.
Oh my God. This movie, you guys, it's everything I wanted from movies. It's so good.
It's more than a threesome.
It's more than a threesome. But honestly, very much tying into this episode, the Sean, Topanga, and Corey of it all, it's the dynamic between the three characters that really stands out. And this movie is not afraid to go there in ways that we have wanted movies. Like, I honestly feel like millennials are getting movies for millennials. And it felt very Jerry Bruckheimer in like its suspense and its build. And it just felt like Julia Roberts in like a Julia Roberts movies that we would have gotten in the 90s, but with modern storytelling and allowing that tension and the, I'll say, sensuality between all three characters that like they wouldn't have done. Like, we talk about this all the time. Corey, Topanga, Sean, Rachel, Jack, Eric, there are always these elements of characters who you feel should be a throuple or should be a triad, and they never really go there. Challengers does that. Okay. That is why it's my own work. I love this movie. I can talk about it forever, but I may talk about it at a different point in time.
All right. All right, I'm excited to check it out.
Absolutely. All right, you guys, as always, let us know what you think about this episode. Let us know your thoughts. You can follow us at Brummeets Road on all the socials. You can subscribe to our YouTube. You can join us on Patreon, where we have our Pop Meets World Reacts. If you can, please check out Ryan Schwartz and his work. Don't forget to show him your support by following him on Threads and Instagram at Ryan Schwartz TV, or read his work on TVLine.com. We really enjoyed him. We are so appreciative of him joining us for this episode.
Absolutely.
Okay, you guys, don't forget to come back next week when we have another episode. And as Feeny always says, remember to dream.
Remember to try.
And to do good.
Do some good, y'all. Later, bruh.
Plays what Squirrel says. Later, bruh.
This episode of Broad Meets World was produced by Siege and edited by Tony Curtis. Broad Meets World is a 2Free Tokens media production.
Bye.
Bye-bye.